Harnessing Agricultural Innovation for Transformative Impact, IFPRI Special Event with Dr. Rajiv Shah, Administrator for USAID. Held on Friday, December 7, 2012, in Washington, D.C. Speaker, Dr. Rajiv Shah, Administrator for the United States Agency for International Development.
Thank you, Carlos and Frank and Schengen and Fauzi. We really are very grateful to have the opportunity to come here and speak to you and also to learn from you. I'll say that it's always controversial to sort of talk about agricultural development and agricultural technology with an exclusive focus on silver bullet-like technologies. We all know that it is far more complex and that the genuine path forward requires a total system transformation that includes private investment and roads and infrastructure, more access to irrigation, effective policy environments, and a productive, hyper-productive agricultural research system tied to extension systems and private seed companies and other things that can reach a very large number of small-scale farmers. So sometimes when we talk too much about a small subset of technologies, we don't quite communicate the depth and range of the challenge we face and the broad capacity of this community to address the larger agricultural picture. But on the other hand, when we talk about reaching every small-scale farmer with improved inputs, that's something that most people can understand. It's a concept that most countries that have farmers, and we have them here in the United States, as you know, get. And it's something that from presidents to heads of state to CEOs of big companies and other people that we need to mobilize to enable you to be successful, they can visualize what that looks like and see a better future if that limited and sometimes narrowly described goal is achieved. So with that caveat, I'd like to just take a few moments to describe some of the things that our team is going to be focused on in the next few years and starting actually in the next few months as we look through all of our projects and portfolio investments and ask ourselves the question, are we doing everything we can and are our partners doing everything they can to take these types of technologies to greater scale? The list for us begins with climate-resilient cereals. And you know that just today, the World Bank released a report indicating that global temperatures could rise by 7 degrees Fahrenheit, which would have huge consequences on production systems, in particular for vulnerable populations around the world. On the list of climate-resilient cereals, and again, we seek your input, and I hope you'll use the next few days to generate your thinking on this and help us understand what we should focus on. But the things we're currently most excited about are sub-tolerant rices that we've already seen come out of Erie partnerships and elsewhere. We believe those could reach, as you've indicated, 120 million individuals in farm households, primarily in South Asia. And we believe their use could save significant water utilization in the same context. And if that is in fact true, then we should work together in a redoubled effort to make sure that we're getting those technologies to farmers using all of the newest insights that you've helped develop about how to help scale access to those breakthroughs. We are also enthusiastic about rust-resistant wheat and have been proud to be part of those partnerships and consortia to help make that a reality. There are 40 million hectares across the developing world from Afghanistan to Ethiopia that where this kind of technology would be relevant. And I don't know how far into the system we are in terms of reaching that 40 million, but we should be asking ourselves on a relatively regular basis, how did we do last year in terms of expanding access to adapted varieties of these types of breakthroughs? The one that we perhaps are most enthusiastic about is drought-tolerant or water-efficient maize for Africa in particular. We know there are 30 or 40 million people in Africa that could benefit from varieties that fit that characteristic, even as early as 2016. And if that's in fact true, and if there are great new varieties that are ready to be in the community and used on farm more aggressively, I hope that the CG system is developing methods to measure and report on the reach of some of these new breakthroughs. We've been excited about highly productive grain legumes, including high-yielding pigeon pea and high-yielding chickpea. In these cases, we understand that we could nearly triple yields and reach 6 million hectares with the pigeon pea products alone across eastern and southern Africa and South Asia. And we've also seen a real energy across partners, including ICRISAT and partners in Africa that want to deploy and use those types of technologies more aggressively across a greater percentage of their farmers. We know high-yielding chickpeas can generate 25% yield gains and reach nearly 500,000 farmers in East Africa relatively quickly. So if these great insights are true, and you should help us understand what is the technology frontier, are these the best examples, are there better ones? But if they are true, I'd like to propose that we work together in a renewed and accelerated partnership to every year assess how did we do in reaching a certain level of scale? What novel and innovative efforts have we put in place to try to ensure that more people have access to the great new technologies coming off of your research institutes? Another category of interest is in soil fertility technology, and whether it's dual-use legumes or soil inoculum, deep urea placement, or just the intercropping of nitrogen-fixing tree crops. In all cases, we've modeled out and seen that there are big gains to be had, and you've been promoting these practices for years. So we should ask ourselves, how quickly and on what scale and pace can we ensure that more farmers have access to those specific types of breakthroughs? Livestock vaccination is another area of real enthusiasm, and the fact that there's now in development a subunit vaccine of East Coast fever vaccine that will be easier to transport and use in the field and that could benefit 20 million farmers across Africa within a few years is another example of let's put ourselves to the test. If we really believe in the technology, what can we do to ensure real scale and real engagement with farmers with that particular technology? We've talked a lot in the past about biofortified crops, and I've been with Pamela in settings where we've had the chance to see people, young kids, right, try and taste different kinds of orange flesh sweet potato and report back on their favorite varieties. That's fun to watch. I hope now after several years of that kind of testing, we're able to understand how to ensure that we're reaching as many communities as possible with orange flesh and sweet potato. I know there's some nervousness about NGOs just randomly distributing vines and doing things that might not be tied to real agricultural scientific insight as to what's adapted for what community and what's most likely to be taken up. But it strikes me that after, you know, now for 6 or 7 years, we've had pretty clear data on the power of this particular crop to improve serum retinol levels in children and what that can mean from protecting them from vitamin A deficiency. And it seems like we ought to be ready together to get behind a big new effort to really scale access to certain biofortified foods. And now that the slides are working, can we go back a couple? Do I have the clicker
here? Right here.
Oh, you did? Oh, good. Okay, great. I do want to tell you that that's the Borlaug slide, of course. This was a moment where Dr. Biden and I, Jill Biden, the Vice President's wife, had the chance to visit the Kenyan Agricultural Research Institute. And I just want to put this in context. This was the afternoon of a very difficult day. We spent that morning visiting the Dadaab refugee camp, and this was during last year's drought in the Horn of Africa, and there was a famine declared in Somalia. So we met with survivors of the famine and what was left of their families as they kind of came across the border and came into the Dadaab camp, which had at the time almost 500,000 refugees, just an extraordinary number, and people who were so emaciated that you know, they couldn't hold their heads up, and it was really, really difficult to experience the pain that they were going through in that point in time. But the good news was, in the afternoon, we had the chance to see the flip side of the equation. We had the chance to visit CARI and see some great new technologies. We met with African scientists who had been part of the award program, and they showed us different kinds of sweet potato and why orange flesh was better than otherwise. We met with other scientists who explained to us some of the big breakthroughs in hybrid maize that were now sort of sweeping across Western Kenya. And we really felt encouraged that a focus on technology coupled with outcomes could really change the dynamic of what we saw just that very morning. And so I want to encourage the CG system to continue on the path you're on. Instead of measuring progress sort of center by center and according to your own institutional construct, the work that you've done to come together and say we're going to focus on large-scale outcomes, tie that to areas of real improvements in technology and application of technology, that gives us all reason for hope that we can partner with you in a more effective and larger scale manner as we go forward. At USAID, we've tried to take some similar steps. We've advanced a fundamental new emphasis on agricultural research and really tried to place that at the heart of our Feed the Future effort. We've increased our funding from $60 million in agricultural research to $135 million last year, and we continue to accelerate, I believe, at that rate of growth as we go forward. That's an extraordinary commitment at a time of otherwise difficult budget realities, but it's entirely appropriate given how valuable agricultural research is to addressing some of the most consequential issues we face around the world. This past October, we launched the Feed the Future Food Security Innovation Center to ensure our efforts in research are strategic, focused, and well-coordinated. Last year, in partnership with you, we had the release of our Feed the Future research strategy, which focused our efforts on four large-scale agroecological zones and a handful of crops and that we thought were most and vaccine products that were most relevant to supporting the path out of poverty for people in Feed the Future focused countries. This past October, we, in addition to announcing that the president had in fact fully lived up to his 2009 pledge to spend $3.5 billion in a renewed effort on agriculture and food security, we announced the first ever progress report and report card for Feed the Future. And what it showed was really exciting. It showed that we now reach, through our programs on an annual basis, 1.8 million farm households, and that we've seen real improvements in agricultural productivity on farm for those households. And we believe that those improvements are resulting in reaching 8.8 million children with better nutrition. I expect that we're capable of much more in a second term as we accelerate our investment, learn what's worked and what hasn't worked, and continue to focus our partnerships with those countries that are willing to make the tough policy reforms required to sustain the kinds of gains that we all know can be achieved in agricultural development. I'd encourage you all to get, and we'll ask our team to distribute to you the Feed the Future research strategy and report card, the progress report, because we seek your feedback and guidance on our work as we go forward. Now, to help achieve critical mass in these areas and to help ensure that we're doing as much as we can with scientific collaborations in particular, I'm pleased to announce a new competitive exchange program that's designed to encourage U.S. university scientists to share their expertise and build more meaningful collaborations with CGIAR scientists around the world. For more information on this, we're going to make more than $1 million available for this in its first year, but we intend to expand it in the future. And in order to facilitate implementation of this effort, I encourage you to contact our chief scientist, Julie Howard. Julie, you want to stand up so folks can see you? And you can reach her at juhoward@usaid.gov. So that's for you, Julie. At the global level, the announcement of the new wheat yield network last month in Mexico was a model example of how we can work together at greater scale. with more than 20 partners, the network aims to raise the yield potential of wheat by up to 50% over the next 20 years. And that's great to have those kinds of targets and networks of partners that come together in a management system that can track how we're doing over time against those promises and commitments. First, we're asking all of our missions as part of this year's annual portfolio review to work with country leaders to establish baseline adoption rates and yearly adoption targets for the specific technologies that they believe they can most effectively take to scale in the next 5 years. We'll make these targets and baselines all public and transparent, but we seek your help in identifying the right technologies. I only insist that we set the targets so we know that whether or not we're achieving success. Second, because we know that adoption doesn't happen in a vacuum, we're going to have all of our missions identify how they will support country policymakers to really implement many of the reforms that countries have already committed to, reforms that help liberalize the seed sector or encourage more private investment in certain parts of the agricultural value chain, or prior commitments to improve access to land tenure and other things. I'm struck by how many heads of state we meet who have publicly made commitments, but it remains difficult for their organizations and their ministries to actually implement those commitments. And we believe the United States can play a role in helping them with that implementation. And finally, we'll ask our missions to work more closely with our partners, including the CGIAR, in this process. We'd like to really pursue a more open form of operations where your scientists and experts can literally help us with our own internal annual portfolio reviews, and we make that as an open offer so that we can have you at the table helping us offer direction to our implementing partners in the field about which technologies they should focus on, what are some of the insights and breakthroughs that are relevant that are coming out of your laboratories and your centers and that have real application around the world. You know, we've seen throughout, this is a great experience I had in northern Kenya, but this is a group of pastoralists that are receiving insurance payments, again, during last year's drought in the region. And the insurance payments in this case came from Swiss Re. And the CEO of Swiss Re told me that the reason they were able to engage in this partnership with USAID was we were able to connect them to pastoralist communities through our partners. And they were able to learn how they operated. And that their genuine advances in actuarial science have made it possible for them to more effectively model and predict weather patterns, and for them to put in place weather-indexed insurance products. So this is a rainfall-indexed insurance product, and pastoralists literally received a payment because there was a drought. And in many cases, it kept communities in their community and together, as opposed to walking to camps for food and support and safety. And I share this example at the end of a talk that's mostly focused on agricultural innovation to make the case that you already know, that it's not always about a new seed or a new form of fertilizer or some new agricultural input, that advances in actuarial science, advances in logistics and product packaging, advances in how we reach farmers with information and how we reach consumers with advertising can shape their own consumer behavior and have huge impacts on whether or not we all succeed together in this effort to eliminate hunger and extreme poverty with a focus on agricultural technology. So I am just thrilled to have the chance to be with you. The president will continue to double down and refocus on food security and hunger. This is a president who literally took an hour and a half out of a G8 meeting, invited in his colleague heads of state, but also his African counterparts, as well as private companies and lead scientists, for a discussion on how we could get this work to be more effective. And our conclusion is that it comes down to better partnership with you at the CG system, better partnership with companies that have the technology and logistics to make investments to create change, better partnerships with countries that absolutely have to put the right policies in place and then execute them in order for this to be effective, and ultimately better policies with farmers and communities and even children whom we wish to serve. So we're committed to that better partnership. You'll see it in continued accelerated investments on behalf of the United States. You'll see it in transparency in our reporting on how we perform. And you'll see it in our continued request for your help and your engagement to literally sit at the table with us and help us design programs that can take the great things that you create to greater scale in the field. So thank you. Thank you for the chance to be here.